thanks for tuning in. This is Anshuman Sinha, and today I have an investor with me. His name is Neeraj Saran, who came to US in 1990 and has been very active in the angel and the investment areas related to startups. So we are going to talk to him today. We are going to understand his investment philosophy, what type of company he has invested in, and what is in future that he is looking at. So welcome to the show, Neeraj. Introduce yourself, please.
It's nice to be here, Anshuman. Very happy to be here and talk about my investment journey. I started off as a software developer, writing code on, you know, Windows and C++. And over time, I moved up to engineering management. I was VP of engineering at a startup that Amazon acquired. I've been CTO at a couple of smaller companies. And then I did my own startup in the virtual reality space. And lately, actually for a few years now, I've been investing in companies. Started off early stage startups, and now I've evolved beyond that. And as we get into further on into the conversation, I'll give you more details on what are some of the newer exciting opportunities that I'm seeing today.
Great. Thank you. And Neeraj, so we were chatting a little earlier, and you know, you were born and brought up in Mumbai, and after that you went to BITS Pilani in Rajasthan to do your bachelor's, and then, you know, you also did your master's over there. So tell us about your early childhood and, you know, your studies, what you did there, and, you know, what prompted you to come to US in 1990?
Okay. So my father was in the government service in the Indian Railways. I was born in Kota in Rajasthan, but we moved. So first few years, my, you know, like the government, every couple of years, you get transferred to different areas. And then we came to Bombay when I was 6 years old. And I did all my schooling in Bombay. Engineering, went to Pilani, did engineering, did a master's in economics also. And then when I started working in Bombay, this company, Tata Consultancy Services, TCS, they had this thing where after a couple of years, they would send you abroad, you know, basically to the US for assignments. And remember, this was back in the early 90s, right? So at that time, I didn't want to come through them. So I looked in the, you know, the Sunday newspaper had a section called Opportunities Abroad. And I looked at it, they had something for California, and their office was right next to where I was working in Bombay. So Monday afternoon, I went during lunchtime. 15 minutes into my conversation, the guy says, "Hey, Neeraj, do you have a couple more friends you can come and, you know, bring also with you?" So then literally 2 days later, Wednesday evening, we had an interview with somebody in San Ramon in California. Mm-hmm. And the person says, "I'll see you on Monday." And wow. You know, we were not prepared at all. I at least had some idea. The two friends were not prepared at all. They just came for the fun of it, just to see what's going on. And mm-hmm. then we went for an interview on to the US consulate on Friday. And luckily, they turned us down. Okay, so because we were not ready, we were happy from that perspective. And then we went again a week later, we, you know, just prepared, got some right documentation. And then I was here in the US like 2 or 3 weeks after that.
That was very fast, you know, good old days. these days it takes such a long time. I was just reading somewhere that if you are going for a business visa, the line is so long that, you know, they are giving you 3 to 4 months ahead appointments. And look at that, you know, at that time it was so easy. I came to US in 1998. At that time also, it was very, very easy.
Yeah.
You know, go through the proper channel and, you know, you will get the visa to come to US. So great. So from BITS Pilani, MS in mechanical engineering, and from there, your transformation in investment that you started back in 2024, you made your first investment. So how was that journey? You know, so you came here on maybe H-1B visa, started working for a company. Obviously, you were with Microsoft. And after that, you worked for a company which was owned by Amazon. And then when did the investment bug bit you? You know, how did you make that transition?
In many ways, it is not very different from a typical Silicon Valley person. Right. So we work in tech companies. We work in both early stage, late stage companies. And in my case, it was a little bit different where. So we had been here many years. We had been here 15 years or so. The kids were young. for family reasons, you know, for my parents, we decided to move back to India. And so I joined Microsoft here in Mountain View, California, and I took a international expat package back in the days. Very, very nice. So we, you know, and we went with the intention of being in India for a couple of years. Those 2 years, as happens, became longer and longer. And I would check with my kids, check with my family. Do you want to continue staying in India? Do you want to go back to the US? And they said, no, India's great. So 4 years, I worked in Microsoft in Hyderabad. And then there's a company called Helium, somebody called Ashish Gupta. He, for his portfolio company in Delhi, he wanted a head of engineering to come and lead there. It was a legal services company. And they wanted a technology person to productize the product. So he convinced me over many weeks to leave Microsoft and join this legal process outsourcing company. And that's what I did. And that really, because I was CTO at a legal company in India, and there began my startup journey. So there I was working for the startup. A couple of years later, I joined an angel group out of Delhi in India. And there I started investing. So earlier it was very passive. They had in-person meetings every Saturday. You'd go there for a couple of hours. 5 or 6 startups would come and pitch. The investors would be in one room and we'd be asking the founders different kinds of questions. And that time I had really no idea. So I would learn from the other experts in the room. And these were the top people in India who formed Naukri.com, InfoEdge, some of the biggest industrialists, family offices. You know, their children were trying to also expand the family business. So they were looking at different kinds of technology startups. My first investment, non-tech, a consumer company, a food company. 2 young kids from Calcutta making momos. You know momos, right? Like dim sum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they had a little kiosk in a bigger department store in Calcutta. And they were making fresh momos from there. And they were growing really well, smart people. But eventually, then it took a year for us to convince them to take our money, our angel investment.
Wow.
So we invested $1 million. That time, the valuation was about $10 million. And then a few months ago, they raised the Series D at about a $300 million valuation. So like 30 times that investment has gone up. It's on paper. Who knows how they'll do? But they're doing really well. They are among the biggest, fastest growing quick service restaurants in India. They're now competing with the likes of KFC and Burger King kind of places. And they moved on from momos to fine dining, Chinese food, different chicken kind of. So they've got 4 different verticals now. They're smart people. And I think that's where the startup investment bug really hit me, to see how we as investors can be effective, not just in providing them the initial amount of money to grow and scale the business, but the mentorship, the advice, the network connections that I feel are extremely valuable for young founders to gain so that they can scale rapidly.
Yeah, so this is great. You know, 30x for a, you know, Momo style of company. And, you know, obviously, as you said, that, you know, now they have 4 verticals and they are competing with the likes of KFC. So that is a big transition and a big journey. So that tells me that, you know, you are a spotter, you know, you know how to spot good investment opportunities. So share your some experiences related to that, you know, what you really look for in a startup founder. What is that spark which caught your eye?
So there are many things. The main thing definitely is the relationship with the founder, how open they are, how passionate they are about the business is pretty much a given. But are they willing to learn? Are they really willing to listen to some of the investors for different aspects? And to me, I have seen that seems to be the biggest difference in, as you say, spotting what works. Obviously, they need many, many things. You need to have something unique, some unique value proposition in an industry that's growing rapidly.
Yeah.
And as long as you're willing to learn and really have a large vision where you want to scale and think big, that to me seems to make a big difference. Now, having said that, not everybody is successful. There are many, many different reasons. You know, it's the market dynamics change. We saw with the COVID pandemic, entirely a lot of things changed. So how can you pivot when needed? How do you learn from some of the failures, from some of the mistakes? And how do you grow from there? It's hard to tell. As an investor, you only have so much of time and so many interactions with the founding team. And it's a lot of it is gut. And a lot of it varies. So I've invested in startups both in India as well as here in Silicon Valley and across the US. And I wish there was a simple formula. I wish there was really something that you could say, hey, these five characteristics will pretty much guarantee you a successful investment or a successful startup.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true. It's not possible at all, right? If there was some simple magic formula, we'd all be rich. We'd all be super successful. And I think that is part of it, is how do you listen to your own instinct? How do you work with them? And I engage with them very closely. So I've got about 40-something investments now. And with three or four companies, I'm very hands-on, engaged very directly. So I'm on the board of three of the startups, and I'm on the advisory board of a couple of other startups. I'm a part-time CTO slash advisor for a couple of other kinds of startups. So you can't be actively engaged with 30-something companies, but but I try to be with three or four companies. It keeps me totally active. They're in different domains. Most of them are in some kind of tech, deep tech like AI, generative AI. But some of them, as I said, the first one, consumer company, a recent one is a mental wellness startup. So all different kinds of, it's a range. It's just what, as you said, right? Some of it is a founder, some of it is a passion that they have around what they're building and the founding team.
Mm-hmm. So 8 years ago, you started Maya Valley Ventures. So let's talk about that. How did you come up with the name and what you are really doing through Maya Valley Ventures?
The name comes from two places. So one is like, you know, Silicon Valley, so the valley. And the second part is Maya is my mother's name. It's also the Mayan civilization, how it was the earlier precursor to most of civilization today, how they grew, how they formed, how they scaled. And that's where, that is really the intent of Maya Valley Ventures, which is to help the early founders, early startups, early stage startups to grow and blossom and become like a large civilization.
Cool. So as you said earlier, Neeraj, that you know you have done 40 plus investments, and I know you have 3 exits. Let's talk about those exits, what those exits were, what type of company they were, where they are today.
Okay. So exits. So one of the exits, again, I think this is a lot of it is market dynamics, market circumstances. This company returned to the investors 3 times, 3x in about 3 years, which is really good, right? And they found the opportunity where they were scaling. So they had really, they were Indian founded startups or Indian founders, but the product was here in the US. And I think the US market dynamics are a little more easier for mergers and acquisitions. So they got acquired for a very nice premium to what we had gotten at. The other two exits, not so good. Okay. So 1 year in Silicon Valley, we thought would do really well. The founders were serial entrepreneurs, very successful with multiple exits. They had tier one investors behind them that were very actively engaged with them. But like a year ago, 18 months ago, they just collapsed. And that was part of the just some of it was cash flow where they were unable to raise the subsequent round. So you have all kinds of exits. And for, you know, for startups, the number really is something like 80 to 90% of startups are not successful.
Yeah.
And that is the other reason why as an investor, for example, you need a diversified portfolio. Just like in the public stock market, you need to have different kinds of investments across different sectors, different industries, different stages, small cap, large cap, you know, mutual funds or ETFs, so that you have to diversify, because nobody can really predict what is going to be successful and how successful it can be. So at Maya Valley, I started with early stage investments, lots of them. And now lately, I'm doing something very different. There's a huge market need for this, and this is in the secondary market.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really exciting, and that's a big part of what Maya Valley Ventures is now offering to investors. So the focus is kind of a little bit different. It's not purely on the startups, on the founders, but now it is how for the investors, like me, like you, right? Like what Startup Steroid provides, what SPV Hub provides, is opportunities for investors to diversify the portfolio.
Yes.
And everybody has been doing early stage, mainly because there was no opportunity. If you wanted to invest in something like an OpenAI or a SpaceX, retail investors, small investors, angel investors like us had no opportunity. We had no access. And we did not have the minimums that a lot of these investments require.
Right.
And that's where, you know, I jumped in a few months ago when OpenAI, all the drama was happening with the, you know, with Sam Altman and all of that. And everybody worldwide was interested. And casually, I asked somebody at a dinner party, hey, would you want to invest in OpenAI? And he thought for a second and said, of course. And then I remembered that for the last few years, I had been getting opportunities to invest in these kinds of deals. But I kept saying no, mainly because, and again, the minimums are pretty high and I did not want to be overly concentrated in a small number of these companies.
You're right.
And that's when Maya Valley really picked up, where I spoke to a couple more guys at the next dinner party and they said, yes, we'd be interested. And then I spoke to you guys and said, hey, would you want to host an SPV on your platform? Would you do late stage? Would you do secondaries? Because they're a little bit different than the typical early stage investments, right? Yeah. We don't invest directly into OpenAI. I mean, I wish we could, but you know, there are too many layers in the middle. For a $90 billion company, you don't get access, you know, unless you're the lead investor putting in many tens of billions.
So true. So let's talk a little more about the secondary market. And obviously, it is such a big opportunity that you are bringing to the table for the you know, early stage investors, because, you know, as you said earlier, you need to diversify. So not just in early stage startups, but, you know, if you can also participate through you in the secondary market, that is always good. So, you know, I, in quick succession, I saw three very successful companies coming through you, through Maya Valley, to our platform: OpenAI, Anthropic, and SpaceX. So, you know, all great companies. You are based in Silicon Valley. So did that play the role in getting a chunk of these great companies? And, you know, how did it all happen? You know, three quick succession.
Yeah, and this is really, this goes to show the demand, the large untapped opportunity that people are looking for. So like all my colleagues, they're at a similar stage of life. They've all done well. The kids are pretty much out of college and they're looking at what to do next, with what kind of investments. And they've really only been exposed to either early stage startups or the public market. And when this idea came up, when this opportunity came up, especially OpenAI, that's such a household name, it was on top of mind for everybody. So it was an easy sell, meaning that you don't need to do any due diligence on the company. Yeah. Unlike early stage, exactly what you asked earlier on. What are the secret, what is the secret sauce that determines if the startup is going to be successful? And as I said, there is no secret sauce. Unlike in OpenAI, it's so well known, everybody knows worldwide that, hey, the technology is phenomenal, the industry is growing like crazy, and everybody believes. So the only real convincing or due diligence, if you will, is, hey, is the valuation justifiable? Do we believe that if we get in at $90 billion today, can the company grow 5x, 10x or more? Which is what, so the risk-reward ratio is a lot better in a late-stage opportunity like OpenAI. And, you know, so the other thing is that these companies, earlier on, let's say Amazon, when they went public at $500 million valuation, when they was much smaller. Today, they're, you know, $2 trillion company size. So earlier, companies would go public much sooner. Today, it's changed a lot in the last few years. Companies are going public 10 years, 11 years later, and at substantially higher valuations. which means right. investors, right? You could buy, you could get into an IPO of an Amazon or a Google and still make a lot of money because the upside would still exist after they went public. Today, mm-hmm. that's not true anymore because these companies, they go public when they're already 10 billion or 20 billion or even later. SpaceX mm-hmm. today valuation is close to 200 billion and there are no signs of them going public. So if and when they go public, you will not get any of the upside. And that is why the private markets over the last 4 or 5 years are doing really well. It's a $12 trillion market opportunity. There's $4 trillion of dry powder, which means investors have committed the money and people are now looking to deploy it, invested into Anthropic, Perplexity, these kind of AI companies or any kind of earlier stage startups.
Mm-hmm. What are the secondary market opportunities are you looking at right now?
So there's plenty. I mean, literally, there's no end to them. All these hot companies. And see, there is like the Stripe, right? These companies have been around. Databricks have been around for a few years now. They are right. also, they're also constantly raising. So those are some opportunities. Now let me bring something new to the table. So we had early stage. We got these secondaries, which are much later stage. And again, as an investor, how do you diversify your portfolio? Mm-hmm. So early stage, as I said, the early stage startups, 90% of them are not successful. So you do want to diversify. The secondaries right. help for sure. They're, you know, lower risk. They've already proven their product market fit. They've already, you know, the revenue is already growing, you know, 5x, 10 times year over year. So we know that they are, the risk is much less. They will not collapse. They will not just disappear off the face of the earth.
Right, right.
Now, so you to diversify, you need a few. Like that's why I've got 40, 50 startup early stage investments.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the secondaries, with the later stage, again, you can build up a portfolio of 4 or 5 or 10 or something. Or the third option, the new option is invest in a fund. So leave it to the professionals who are already doing this. And this gets you a chance to come in earlier instead of waiting for OpenAI to reach a 100 billion valuation. Try to find the next OpenAI
mm-hmm.
at a much earlier stage.
Right. And
one way to do it is yourself. One way to augment that is also through a fund. So for an mm-hmm. investor, you can become a limited partner in one of these funds. And I'll give you an example. So Andreessen Horowitz, I think everybody knows them, A16Z, they are the most active, most prestigious, most well-known venture capital fund out there today.
Mm-hmm.
They are the ones who invested in pretty much all these companies at an early stage. They found them, they've mentored them, they've grown them to tens or hundreds of billions of dollars valuation. And they are currently raising a round of a fund, a $7 billion fund. It's already oversubscribed. Okay. So investors like us don't have any access. The minimums are again very large, you know, tens of millions of dollars. So if you and I as an investor want to invest in these funds, it's not easy to get access. And right. that is where I'm coming in now. So I've been reaching out, you know, my network is big enough. The relationships are such that I've been able to connect with them and get access to their investment. So I'm thinking the next couple of investments will be in some of these marquee tier one funds. And again, help investors to get access to them at reasonable check sizes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the great progression. And, you know, that will basically do the complete circle that, you know, you started with early stage company, then you went into secondary. And in secondary also, you chose the SPV model, which again gave a lot of small investor an opportunity to play, you know, in the big club. And then now through the fund, you're trying to do, you know, even at larger scale. So, you know, all the best to you on that. And, you know, fund, you know, at TAI, I was instrumental in opening two funds, you know, Fund 2020 and Fund 2 for TAI SoCal Angels, the Southern California chapter, and have quite a bit of experience in that for the cash call and, you know, things like that. And, you know, also how to identify the company and take them through the process. TAI being a volunteer organization, you know, it has a different mindset of doing things. But, you know, for a profit-making fund, with a carry and, you know, all those things, it is much more easier to do. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head that, you know, leave it to the professional. You know, this is a high risk, high return market. These opportunities, don't try to, you know, do it on your own. There are too many unknowns. Unless this is your day job, you're not going to figure it out that, you know, how complex it is. You know, on a piece of paper, it looks very easy that, you know, hey, here is an opportunity. I have heard about this opportunity, or, you know, I have read about it, and, you know, here is my $100,000 check. It is not that easy. You will lose that money in a
second. Well, I mean, angel investors, they hope to be able to figure out which are the higher potential startups. But you're right. I mean, you know, but see, it depends on a lot of it depends on your motivation. So it is not always a pure financial investment that drives an investor. It is also you want to be engaged. You believe that you have the expertise, right? In the corporate world, in your previous life, all the domain expertise that you have, your network, can you open doors for business development purposes? Can you help the founders with sales and marketing, right? That is really a lot of angel investors want to contribute, want to help a startup, not just financially, but in these other very tangible ways. And that's what we believe really helps. And it helps because founders are busy and they look for specific things that they don't have access to or expertise in. So for an investor, you're right. The risk is higher and the professionals know what they're doing. So and yeah. Andreessen Horowitz, Sequoia, Accel, these kind of VC firms have obviously a super large network. They've done this many times. There are other accelerator programs like the Y Combinator kind of programs. Right? So they, again, the most competitive, the most well-known of all the accelerators, from where you have Stripe, Airbnb, DoorDash, all of these, you know, super, super successful, not just unicorns, but decacorns. And I think they call them centurions or something, right?
Okay.
Tens of billions, hundreds of billions in valuation. They've been incubated out of places like Y Combinator. So you know, those guys know, again, what the secret sauce is. And can we tap into that? So that's the other fund that I'm looking at, is try to get something out of them maybe.
Right. So Neeraj, when are you opening up the fund?
Soon. I'm waiting for a couple of things. I was talking to Ashish earlier today, an hour ago. So two things, right? One is I'm trying to see whether your platform enables investments from self-directed IRA, from a retirement account.
Yes.
Yeah. So because these are long-term investments and it makes so much of sense to invest from a retirement account. Because one, of course, is long-term and then you get tax either deferral or if it's from a Roth account, even, you know, no tax. And you've heard of Peter Thiel's most famous investment from PayPal. All of his options, I believe, were in his Roth account.
Yeah.
So as he started in cashing out, you know, billions of dollars of tax favored or pretty much zero tax implication.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for your platform, SPV Hub, to start enabling that. And then working with some of the custodians to figure out specifics on how can we invest from retirement.
Yes. We are working diligently towards that. And, you know, it will be active very, very soon. So thank you. Thank you for using us for your three SPVs, OpenAI, Anthropic, and SpaceX. All the best to you for Maya Valley Ventures and the fund. Have you decided the name of the fund yet?
I'm talking to a few of these guys. And I will pick pretty soon in the next couple of weeks. And, you know, I'm waiting, like, as you said, three transactions in the last 3 months. So I want to give people a little bit of break. I want to wait till the next quarter. So that's from a cash flow perspective, planning perspective. And the other benefit of these funds is that you don't put all the money up front. Right? You invest over like a period of 3 years or more. And that makes it much easier from, again, a cash planning perspective too.
Absolutely. That makes total sense, Neeraj. So you are full-time doing investment and looking at opportunities and then, you know, taking it to the finish line by investing in those companies, correct?
Yeah. So my startups, right? As I said, I'm actively engaged with a handful of startups and that keeps me busy. So mm-hmm. that's a big part of it, you know, part-time CTO, just helping them in different things. There are some startups headquartered in India who want to now expand into the US market. Mm-hmm. So helping them opening some doors, helping them raise the next round of funding.
So real quickly, you know, let me take you back to your initial days when you started your investment, and then you have done 40 plus investments. So out of those 40 plus investments, how many companies you have gone through, and how do you really evaluate a company before making an early stage investment?
So at least half of them I've done as part of some angel group, either the Thai Silicon Valley Angels here mm-hmm. in Silicon Valley, California, or as yes. part of the Indian Angel Network, which uh-huh. is a group India. So
yeah.
that makes it easier because the deal flow, they will do the first levels of validation and vetting.
Right.
And then a couple of people or a handful of people will get together and do the due diligence. It takes a lot of time, right? You have multiple mm-hmm. conversations with the founders. You do customer reference checks. You look at competitive analysis. You talk to the customers. So there is a lot of time and effort that goes into that. And you right. can only do so many. And hence, you know, so you to mix it up, then some of them I will lead the due diligence. Some I will let others take the lead and just write a check based on their recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Cool, cool. Neeraj, for the benefit of the startup founders, the founders who are starting right now, coming up with an idea, trying to build a great product, platform, SaaS, med devices, whatever industry, you know, what is a message from a seasoned investor like you to them, you know, where they should focus, what they must do before they present themselves in front of an investor?
I guess a couple of things. One is, you know, what I like to hear is, what is your story? What made you decide to pick this particular space or domain? What is the pain point that you felt? It mm-hmm. typically starts with that. That builds up the passion for you to say, hey, I believe this is an area ripe for disruption. And then if the market is large enough, that makes it exciting to everybody. So that, like, and today AI is the best example of that. Generative AI specifically, large language models, make it so much easier to disrupt the existing industries, whether it's mm-hmm. on the medical side, whether it's on the manufacturing side, on the mining side. I'm talking to one startup right now, just 2 days ago. He's disrupting the ports and containers and terminals space, right? These large containers, they're pretty much old, ancient businesses ripe for the picking. And that's where really startups, I think, can disrupt a lot of these established industries. And today, do it very quickly. If you use mm-hmm. some existing co-pilots from either an OpenAI, Anthropic, or pretty much anybody else, the time to market, the time to develop at least a prototype or an MVP is so much faster. So you don't need a lot of time. You don't need a lot of money either to be able to create a working prototype, get some pilots, mm-hmm. get some validation from customers, and start looking at the product market fit.
Right. No, thank you for that nugget. So with that, we come to an end of this episode of Investor Spotlight. Thank you, Neeraj, for giving your precious time to me for this podcast, for the benefit of the investors, as well as for startup founders. Thank you so very much.
Absolutely. Nice to be here, Anshuman.